www.ReachMeReach.org. This is Charlotte Talks. I'm Mike Collins. The midterm election season is underway. States are completing their primaries in advance of the November election, and North Carolina is turning out to be an important state with regard to control of the Congress. And for that reason, we're going to be seeing a lot of money. We are seeing a lot of money pouring in from out of state to support candidates and issues well in advance. So we're going to spend a few hours talking to leaders of the two political parties in the state. The Republicans will join us next Thursday, but today we begin with the executive director of the North Carolina Democratic Party, Casey Mann. Thank you for driving down from Raleigh to be with us this morning. I appreciate it.
Oh, well, thank you for having me.
And if you'd like to join our conversation, you can get to us by email, charlottetalks@wfae.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. How would you describe the state of the Democratic Party in North Carolina this morning?
I think it's a new day for the North Carolina Democratic Party. I think that having been in power for over 100 years and having built the state and then having circumstances change, it's been a place where transition and change. And we just had our state convention in Jefferson Jackson, our big annual gala over the weekend, and it was sold out before the event occurred. We had more people than we'd had in the past and folks who hadn't been out in a very long time. So the energy is coming back and we're trying to find new ways of doing things without the same kind of financial strains that had been there before, and to revamp and really kind of put it into the people's hands, because those are the folks that really matter the most.
So why is it a new day? It sounds like you're trying to put lipstick on a pig here. So.
Well, I think you can't – well, let's look at it from a business standpoint.
Okay.
We are at an institutional disadvantage. We don't control the House or the Senate or the governor's mansion. Simultaneously, the General Assembly last year took away our public financing. So overall, it cut somewhere between $500,000 to $2 million mm-hmm. a year between – when you consider, you know, power donations with this public financing. And you can't – have the exact same expenditures and do things the exact same way you used to without the same revenue streams. And so a lot of this past year, and specifically the past 4 months, has been assessing how we do things more efficiently, how we do things that are responsive to our own constituents, the Democrats, or really the North Carolinians in general. But I also think that folks did not anticipate such an extreme Republican agenda in the General Assembly. And so where often we had to do things to create interest and engagement, we are now have the benefit of having folks who want to reengage.
What do you think happened? In 2008, Barack Obama took North Carolina, and there was euphoria among Democrats because they didn't expect to happen. 2 years later, you lose the state house, and we have a Republican governor now. What happened after 100 years? What happened?
Well, I do believe that in 2008, I think that there were of only a select few that actually thought that North Carolina would win for our president. And indeed, it was the smallest margin of victory in the country. But I also think that politics is a pendulum swing. And I think with the jubilation that Democrats felt, there was also a moment of clarity for the Republicans that they had lost potentially the Southern strategy, right? That they could control, as long as they could control North Carolina, they could control the South, and therefore they could succeed. And I think that put them where we unfortunately rested on our jubilation and victory. They proceeded to fight harder.
So was it just that, or is there some demographics switch going on, or some kind of a switch in the psyche of voters?
I do believe there's also the demographics. The changing demographics in North Carolina absolutely play a role. We have had enormous growth. And, you know, just look at Charlotte. I was at an event a few months ago in Charlotte where they said that the population of Charlotte had increased somewhere between 20% and 30% over the past decade. And of that, only 18% of that population shift was white. Mm-hmm. The rest was
But that should help you.
It does, but it at the same time, when you move to a place, politics is typically it starts local and builds national. Mm-hmm. And if you're new to an area, we went from 90% native to maybe 50-50. When you're new to an area, your connection to the community is not quite as deep. You may not know the names, you may not know the players, and I don't know if you've ever read, say, the New Jersey Republican platform, but it's a different beast than the North Carolina Republican platform. My family is a long lineage of Maryland Republicans. Eisenhower Republicans, duty-driven, things like that, and you know, my grandmother switched affiliation right before her death because what she was finding is that there's a shift going on there as well. And you look at Cantor's race in Virginia, and you can see that there is a pull, a tug of war going on in the Republican Party toward a more right wing. And so I think just as North Carolina is in transition, the Democratic Party is in transition. But I think in the long haul, we have a very very bright future.
If you come from a long line of Maryland Republicans, why are you a Democrat?
Well, interestingly enough, both of my parents worked for the Department of Defense and retired early. We've always been civic-driven, duty-driven. But even when I look at the history, my great-grandfather was a county commissioner. Mm-hmm. He was a farmer originally, but he was on the county commission and signed the incorporations for Columbia, Maryland. I'm not sure if you're familiar.
I know exactly. It's between Baltimore and Washington.
That's right. But it was a
planned community.
Planned community, but it was planned to be integrated racially, religiously, mm-hmm. and socioeconomically. And so here you have this Republican county commissioner in the mid-20th century seeing something that was not what I wouldn't say that the Republicans would necessarily argue for a planned community to be integrated socioeconomically. Mm-hmm. So Columbia, as you know, has public housing, has affordable housing, and then we'll have very high-end housing all within villages where there are schools and stores. So there's no poor part of town. And so I would have to say that probably we come from an older strain of Republicans. Yeah. And if you look historically, Republicans and Democrats have shifted what is left, what is right, what is, you know, over.
Well, Republicans point to John Kennedy and say they could support John Kennedy because he cut taxes.
Exactly. Exactly.
Democrats here in Mecklenburg County, possibly the state. I'm not as familiar with the state party as I am with the Mecklenburg Democratic Party. They're certainly not as organized, at least from the outside in. It appears that they're not as organized as Republicans. Today, GOP people seem to be marching in lockstep with the same identical talking points, and you cannot get them off their talking points because that is the message. And that strategy is extremely effective. It is laser targeting people, and they are responding. Can Democrats, who I don't know that you fight that kind of lockstep organization, but you certainly haven't been able to execute it, can you win against something like that?
Oh, I believe so, because we have people. We have people. It may be one message, but if you look at the tent, the coalition that are Democrats in our state, we have diversity, we have inclusion, we have women, we have the LGBT community. So there's a lot of different folks all having different issues.
But so did the movement on Wall Street, the name of which escapes me at the moment for some reason.
Occupy.
They had all that diversity, and they were not as successful in developing from that stage of their development to what the Tea Party was like when it first started to what it is now. They just defeated Eric Cantor, for crying out loud. How can you win if you don't all have the same message, if you're not all pointing in the same direction at the same time with the same goal in mind?
Well, I think we are actually have the same goal. I think we have common vision. We have common goals. If you look, so Charlotte local, you look at our newest senator, Senator Jeff Jackson. He has spoken out against fracking, and that's been a nearly universal talking point from our standpoint. It's not even talking point. It's about clean water. I think that for and the Mecklenburg Democratic Party, as with the Democratic Party across the state, has suffered from this change of economic positioning that we're in. And so it's not that they have different messages at all. It's I think that we have the freedom to adapt our message to culturally what fits a particular place. Because if you look at their lockstep that the Republicans are bringing, a lot of people aren't happy with it. And the kinds of issues that a lot of folks want, a lot of the popular messages, raising the minimum wage, investing in our education, healthcare expansion, these are things that a majority of the folks actually want. So it doesn't matter how strong you preach your message. If it's the wrong message, people will revolt against it.
There are a lot of people unhappy in the country today with the way the country is going. I don't think you have a shot at getting anybody from the Tea Party wing of the Republican Party to join you, but there might be some dissatisfied moderate Republicans who might think they need to distance themselves, and so they'll vote for Democratic. They may not join the party, but they might vote for Democratic candidates. There are a ton of people who identify as independents. What do you say to them? What is the Democratic Party? What do you say to them to bring them into your fold, if not completely, at least for a candidate or two or an election or two?
Well, the North Carolina stands for opportunity for all. And that is stands on economic lines, that stands on educational lines, as well as simply the quality of life.
Wouldn't the Republicans say the same thing?
Well, we could always compare track records, and it would be – but more importantly, the Democrats would like – are fighting hard to ensure that the people's benefits for their safe living, whether it's water, the ground, jobs, are all – the burden is not shifted to those who need the most – to those who have the most.
And yet there are a lot of people who, it is said, vote against their own economic self-interest when they vote Republican, but still they vote Republican, and they are staunch Republicans. Why aren't you reaching them?
That is a very interesting dynamic, and it's particularly in the South where you'll find that. And I think it goes from a lot longer than just the past 2 years or the past 4 years or the past 10 years. I think that when you look at working class folks who work day to day trying to make sure, making decisions, do I pay the electricity? Do I feed my children? How do I make my car payment? It is easy to accept the messages that are fed to you all the time. There's not a lot of time to dig into the pieces of each. You know, you just look at the three budgets that have been introduced
here in North Carolina.
Here in North Carolina, you know, how would one expect someone who works one or even two low paying jobs in order to wade through thousands of pages and the rhetoric.
Which gets back to the lockstep messaging, laser-targeted messaging that the Republicans have been so great at. They distill down to the very basics what they want to say, even if it's not totally true in some cases, because everybody lies in politics. But it's effective. We'll come back in a second. Casey Mann's with us with the Democratic Party in North Carolina. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and the law firm of Horak Talley, helping individuals and businesses find sharp solutions to their legal needs for more than 80 years. Details at HorakTalley.com. Affordable housing or workforce housing has always been in short supply, and as Charlotte and the region have grown, finding that housing has become increasingly challenging. But researchers from here and around the country have been collecting data on this, and the city will be using that data to guide their decisions on affordable housing in the future. We're going to hear about the challenge, about the data, and the plans to use that information when Charlotte Talks tomorrow at 9.
On the next Diane Rehm Show, many experts agree economic inequality is a problem that must be addressed. Economists Robert Reich and Douglas Holtzakin offer solutions from across the political spectrum.
That's the Diane Rehm Show this morning from 10 to noon after Charlotte Talks on 90.7 WFAE, Charlotte's NPR news source.
It's Charlotte Talks on listener-funded 90.7 WFAE and 90.3 WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Casey Mann is our guest. She is the executive director of the North Carolina Democratic Party. We will be speaking to one of the leaders of the North Carolina Republican Party next Thursday. I want to get back to something I was launching into just before the break and getting back to these talking points that the Republicans are brilliant at. They are brilliant at distilling down into a bullet point, a couple of words, what they stand for or why you should vote for them. And it's something that engages people who are thinking along the same lines, and there's no swaying them from that. Why don't you adopt that on the left?
Well, we do actually have talking points that we put out.
But they're not as effective. They're not as sexy.
Well, you know, there's a difference between campaigning and legislating. Mm-hmm. And campaigning is a sloganized world, to make up a word, sloganized. But legislating is where you have to really focus on the needs of the people. And that is not a slogan-driven world.
But they do it. They name bills after they give names to bills that make them sound incredibly attractive.
Oh, like Viva, the Verify the Voter bill, Viva la Voter Suppression, as I like to call it. but when you also look at their titles of their bills don't match the content. And I think
that's my point. In many cases, it's working. So why not do it on the other side?
Because I'd rather be on the right side of history. Doing it the right way. I'd rather have the trust of the people.
If you only have the trust of a minority of the people, how will you ever be in control?
I don't think that's the case. I don't think we have trust just of a minority of the people. If you look in 2012 at the congressional races, which are statewide, 51% of the vote went to Democrats. And yet we won 4 seats. So this means that in order to sway voters, we have to be much smarter because they have chosen their voters for them. We were in control for a very long time. They had continued the exact same strong message points, as you pointed out, and yet the Democrats had remained in power until one slip. And then they redrew everything to make sure that they held it. And so what we have to do is find the pockets of opportunity. And find, one, engage the voters on the ground, retail politics, one-on-one, the most powerful form of communication is one-on-one with people. And we actually have people. It's anybody can put out a commercial. Anyone can put out a piece of paper. But if I have 50 people knocking on doors, that actually has an incredible effect. Just look at Barack Obama's race in 2008. It's not so much that our message is muddied, because our message is clear. We stand for opportunity. We stand for transparency. We stand for equality. We stand for fairness. These are not, you know, difficult to understand, but we just would prefer, and we engage our voters one-on-one. In groups and small groups and around the state. I have traveled to, in the past year and a half, 77 of the 100 counties.
And when you speak to people in these counties, are they people already in your camp, or are you talking to people on the fence? Who are you talking to? Is it just the choir?
No, not at all. And in fact, if you were to take a scale, right? Mm-hmm. There is a small percentage of folks, we'll call them the Republican base. If you look at the math, the Republican base, it's about 35%. And I'm not really interested in hitting my head against a brick wall to try to convince people who have such a bias against the term Democrat that I would be wasting my time. There are folks that are my base. My base is ready to go. They're engaged. They're energized. So there's this portion in the middle. So I'm really focusing on 65%, not 100% of the population. And so I go to rallies, I go to public events, I come to great radio shows such as yours to try to spread the word and share what's going on. But it's very important to travel, because it's not just a matter of them hearing what we have to say. What I have found most rewarding about my travels is hearing what's going on the ground and hearing. So, for example, the folks in Stokes County, small little Stokes County, are furious about fracking, right? And the folks in Wilmington, the discussions with folks about the tax incentives for the film industry. I don't talk to just the party faithful there. I am talking to filmmakers and contractors and electricians and restaurants and things like that. And so it's a matter of engaging on a lot of different levels. If you limit yourself to, I am the party and this is all we can do, then you never move forward.
There's been some dissension within the Democratic Party in North Carolina. The former executive director was fired, and there was some question about whether or not Ben Chavis was going to come in as the head of the party. That didn't happen. Senator Kay Hagan kind of distanced herself from the state party and let the Wake County Party help run her campaign. Here in Charlotte, a Democratic mayor, Patrick Cannon, had to resign over federal charges, to which he has now pled guilty. Will any of this have fallout for Democrats here or around the state?
What I find the most interesting about that is there have been a lot of sad and disappointing episodes. But what I have noticed, particularly over the past few months, for example, I chat with Kay Hagan and her campaign on a regular basis. We're working very closely together. She was at our JJ.
Okay.
The city council here in Charlotte has pulled together and, you know, almost unanimously appointed Claude Felter and have been doing some really amazing work to try to protect the airport. I think that the story has been, oh, look, the Democratic Party lost power. Oh, look. Look at what's happening. And so there's a magnifying glass on everything that happens. But it's not to say that we're the only group that has ever had pitfalls. I mean, just ask LaRocque how he feels about his investigation. You know, these things are happening. But what I'm finding, especially at this past weekend, we had our state convention, which had over 700 people, and then our Jefferson Jackson, which had nearly 400 people at it, is that the unity, and they actually pledged unity to each other at our state convention. They pledged unity to move forward, and a lot of that, I think, were growing pains and transition pains, and I feel a lot more positive. We're about moving forward. We're about winning elections for Democrats. We're about taking some House seats and some Senate seats. We're about getting Kay Hagan elected, and we are laser-focused on that.
You mentioned Dan Clodfelter, who was practically appointed unanimously by the city council to fill out the unfulfilled term of Patrick Cannon, but that took him out of the state Senate, where he served for 16 years, and although he was in the minority party, he knew where the bodies were buried, he knew where the hallways led, which doors to open, which doors could not be opened, etc. So what will his absence in the state Senate mean for Democrats and for Democrats and for voters in Mecklenburg?
Well, your newest senator, Jeff Jackson, mm-hmm. is an absolutely wonderful choice made by the Democrats in that district. I have seen him down at the General Assembly on a regular basis. He knows those halls. He also is a member of the military, so he still serves his country there. And he has some of the most incredible product of making sure that Mecklenburg, the state, knows what's going on in that General Assembly. He's producing videos, messages. He is out there. He is standing firm as a leader, one of the young new leaders. As a freshman, it is quite astounding to see him pound the pavement of the General Assembly. He is going to be a force, absolutely.
Do you feel, as state Democrats, that going into this next election cycle in November, that you have to distance yourself from the president?
Do I? Mm-hmm. Oh, no. I am a huge fan of our president. I think that he—
But his poll numbers are exceedingly low.
So are Congresses, and it doesn't the way that the polls work is that it's not until you get to your very, very local government do the poll numbers tend to get better. People tend to not like Congress as a whole, but like their individual congressperson. I don't put so much into poll numbers as much as I look at the amount of gray that man has accumulated, and he has had a very difficult job and is trying very hard. Just look at his recent decision to cut carbon emissions, the first time ever done. And it takes a leader to stand up for our lives and safety. You know, he fought for clean air and clean water for the first time, and I believe that in the long run, the tail of the tape will show that he has done some really amazing things.
Will we see Democratic candidates like Kay Hagan referencing President Obama in the campaign, or will they find ways around using his name and using him to help?
Well, I can't speak to what Kay Hagan's
strategy is, but I
think that you can't look at North Carolina as a monolith. Right. You've got the mountains, which is majority white, has some poverty. You look at the east, not the far east, but east of 95. So it depends on where you are.
But that's not true. Is that true anymore when you have Twitter and Facebook and social media? If you say something in a Lions Club meeting in the smallest town in North Carolina and you're a political candidate and you're in a statewide race, that's going to make social media, and people in the mountains will know about it if you said it on the coast and vice versa.
I believe our president is an asset to the Democrats in this state. Absolutely. I cannot speak to what somebody else's strategy may be or otherwise, but I am confident that, any support of our president by our Democrats would be helpful.
A lot of people complain because we're still just emerging from this recession, which he inherited, and Republicans will say, well, he had 6 years and we're still not out of it. He just didn't do an effective job. We've had some problems at various administrations. We have the Benghazi issue, of course. We have the fact that he just released that soldier or did a prisoner swap for the soldier in Afghanistan.
Bergdahl.
Bergdahl, thank you. A lot of things that people either take issue with or the Republicans use as ammunition. So what would you say to voters in North Carolina about Barack Obama?
Well, our president is a leader. He has stand firm on his values, and he is trying and succeeding in pulling us out of one of what could have been a second Great Depression. Absolutely. The Tea Party, remember, came out of the George Bush era. They were a revolution against his economic policies that drove us into that recession. And being someone who is right now suffering from a cut to my budget, I recognize just the hurdle that he has had to overcome. But in addition, in terms of national security, and this is where you will hear my former family DOD, there are things that we just don't know. There are things we don't know, and there are things we're not supposed to know.
Right.
And the reason why we don't know them is national security. And I know it seems like a get-out-of-jail-free card kind of a statement, but it's not.
Well, George Bush would use that regularly. And it was true because it was after 9/11, and there were things the government was up to and doing and investigating that we could not know. That's I think that he said it. His vice president said it repeatedly, and I think it was absolutely true.
Oh, absolutely. But I also think when you look at part of what our president's biggest difficulty has been is a Congress that has not been willing to work with him. So in order to move our country forward, he has had to find creative and innovative ways to do it. And even though they laud him as having done too much of this or too much of this, he actually doesn't have more executive orders than anybody. You know, I mean, there's a lot more hyperbole launched at him than there is fact to back any of it up.
For the first time since the office of the majority leader in the Eric Cantor. For the first time since that position was developed 100 years ago, that person did not win re-election in the primary. Mm-hmm. It was because of a challenge by the Tea Party. He outspent, Eric Cantor outspent his challenger like 400-1. Money did not matter. And it was a landslide in the other guy's favor, and it was a complete surprise. From your point of view, as a Democrat, what does that tell you?
Well, it tells me a couple of things. One, turnout matters. That was an 8.5% turnout in a primary. Here in North Carolina, we had an average of 16-17% mm-hmm. turnout. But it also reminds me of Robin Hudson, the Supreme Court justice who had millions of dark dollars thrown at her with nasty ads. And as a response, we activated the grassroots, which is a far less expensive exercise. But I also think that it means that this idea of drawing districts in order to pick your voters is a double-edged sword.
Did they do that in Virginia?
It was a safe Republican district. It is a safe Republican district. He won the general in 2012, I want to say, approximately by 70%. Mm-hmm. That feels like a pretty safe Republican district to me. But when you harden these lines, the districts are just like you're segregating voters.
But didn't the Democrats do the same thing when they were in power?
I could not imagine that the use of technology that was employed, North Carolina is notoriously the most gerrymandered state. It's one of a few that were used specific technology in order to make sure that they could make these lines as hard and fast as they could. But if you look, when the Democrats were in control, we'll just look at the congressional lines, right? It was 6-7. Sometimes it would flip back and forth, 6 or 7, almost evenly split. And when you look at the vote in 2012, once again, 51%, that 6-7 split between Democrat and Republicans feels fairly fair. But that's part of the reason, frankly, why we need a nonpartisan commission on redistricting. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's really and I think that there's an element of we have taken control, so we're going to hold control.
Eric Cantor supported the Tea Party early in his time in Congress and when he was running. And it was the Tea Party who defeated him because as he got to Washington and rose through the ranks, he began to take on a more national, governmental Washington perspective. So what does that tell you about Tom Tillis's chances against Kay Hagan in November in the Senate race here? And we have 15 seconds.
Well, I think Kay Hagan has an excellent chance to beat Tom Tillis. He has gone back and forth. He has said one thing and done another, and that doesn't seem to go well with any of the electorate.
We'll come back and talk about that race because it could be the most important Senate race in the country, believe it or not. We're here with Casey Mann, Executive Director of the North Carolina Democratic Party, and we will continue in a moment. Charlotte Talks on WFAE. Support for Charlotte Talks comes from WFAE members and Actors Theater presenting Passing Strange, loaded with soulful lyrics and overflowing with passion. This is a rock show with a message. Now to the 28th, details at atcharlotte.org. Many experts have come to agree that income inequality is slowing our nation's economic recovery, but partisanship often gets in the way of finding solutions. Economists Robert Reich and Douglas Holtz Eakin offer ideas from across the political spectrum coming up in 20 minutes at 10 o'clock on The Diane Rehm Show. And if you'd like to join our conversation about politics and more specifically Democratic politics in the Tar Heel State, WFAE.org/Charlotte Talks is a good way to get to us or through Facebook or Twitter. And we're coming right back.
It's not a country club. It's not a yacht club. It's not a book club. But it is a prestigious club. Join the other 14,000 plus individuals here in the Charlotte area who are members of WFAE by making a contribution online at WFAE.org. Thank you for making WFAE the strongest public radio service possible.
The It's Charlotte Talks on WFAE and WFHE. I'm Mike Collins. Casey Mann is our guest. She's the executive director of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Next Thursday, we will have the one of the leaders of the Republican Party in North Carolina with us to talk about similar issues. Let's talk about the most important Senate race in the country, and that would be the race between Kay Hagan, the incumbent Democrat, and State House Senate Leader Tom Tillis. Actually, he's the Speaker of the House. Excuse me. I'm having trouble today keeping houses of Congress and houses of the legislature straight. How much influence will the state Democratic Party have in this election, or will this be pretty much controlled by both the National Democratic and National Republican Party?
Well, we work with – the state parties work with the national parties every day, really, and we all have – as well as with the different campaigns, and we all have different roles that we play. A lot of what we do has to do with, once again, back to the numbers, but that base vote, that's our job. Our job is to engage them and to push them out so that candidates can, you know, use that cushion to focus on those cushion of those voters, those swing voters, the mythical swing voters. And, you know, we've been working very, very closely with Kay Hagan as they're opening up offices across the state with their field folks. I meet with them on a regular basis. And so the national party comes in and does supports us in terms of a state party. I don't mean financially, they support us in terms of resources and things like that. And then the DS does the same for her.
If the party, the national party, comes in and puts a lot of money, which they inevitably will, because this is an important race for the United States Senate for Democrats, if they come in and really heavily support Kay Hagan, can there be coattails?
You mean for further down the further down the ticket? I believe so, absolutely. But it will only happen if we do our job, which is to focus on pockets of opportunity as well as to push out the base vote.
A lot of people are upset.
We run two different strategies simultaneously.
A lot of people are upset with what is going on, has been going on in the state legislature. And of course, Tom Tillis, as the Speaker of the House, was responsible for much of what's going on in the state legislature. What they've done is controversial and upsetting primarily to Democrats and certainly not to Republicans in most cases. So can you use what happened in the last 2 years in the State House effectively against Tom Tillis?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I think when you look at what we call midterm elections, right, which is meaning the years when there's not a presidential race, there's often a drop-off of turnout because folks don't recognize the impact that their local politics have on them. But when you look at the number of folks who are having their unemployment benefits cut or reduced, teachers who are whose classroom sizes are growing while simultaneously getting less help in the classroom for them, and you know the folks who are were with the Medicaid, the refusal of the Medicaid expansion, you have nursing homes that are closing down, hospitals on the verge of closing down. This is affecting across the board your everyday North Carolinians, your folks, your day-to-day. And that in and of itself, the key for us as Democrats is to remind them that this is the Tillis-led General Assembly that has done this. And even more than that, our Governor Pat McCrory has done nothing, who from here from Charlotte has done nothing to stop this tide of extremism.
Can he really? Can any governor in North Carolina stop any tide that's happening in the legislative branch of government, given that it's the governorship in North Carolina, it seems to me, is not unlike the position of mayor in Charlotte?
Well, that's
not terribly powerful.
That's not entirely true. I mean, you look at Governor Hunt. I mean, it's about leadership.
But Governor Hunt had a Democratic legislature.
Well, Pat McCrory has a Republican legislature. So
you would think
he would be the leader of his Republican.
Well, maybe he is. Maybe he firmly believes in what's going on there. Do you think he doesn't?
Well, if you look at his budget versus some of the House and Senate budgets, you can see there's definitely a difference of opinion. But even more importantly, I'm concerned about a leadership that leaves us $500 million shortfall in expected revenues. I mean, we still haven't caught up with that yet. Pat McCrory ran as being a moderate leader, a moderate voice who will stand for all of North Carolina. And I fear that he is surrendered himself to the whims of an extreme General Assembly.
Let's get back to somebody who's running, because Pat McCrory's not. Mm-hmm. Tom Tillis, U.S. News & World Report says that the Democratic Party is trying to paint Tom Tillis as more conservative than he is. Is that a fair assessment, or do you truly believe that he is a staunch, almost Tea Party conservative?
Well, I believe that he, judging from the agenda that he put out last year and this year, he is indeed, he has an extreme ideology. I'm not a fan of labeling Tea Party or otherwise. I will let the Tea Party decide who they want to endorse themselves. But he is clearly an extreme, it comes from an extreme ideology, one that is founded on shifting the burden to those who have the least. And to me, that makes him an extremist. It should be the greatest good for the most number of people. It should be the greatest amount of opportunity for the most number of people, not affording tax breaks. You know, I can go buy a yacht right now and pay less in taxes than if I bought a trailer, and that's under the Tom Tillis General Assembly. So, I mean, to me, that's an extreme view.
Do you have any idea how the polling numbers look for Kay Hagan and Tom Tillis at the moment?
It has been a very tight race all the way through, but I know that her numbers are gaining, which is typical because Congress had had such a negative view, and she had been working in D.C., and now the more she down in our state, the more she's meeting with folks, the better her numbers get. Once again, it's that one-on-one engagement.
In May, it was reported that Kay Hagan had an $8.6 million war chest, while Tom Tillis had just over $1 million left in the bank after the Republican primaries. And as we discovered in Virginia this week, money doesn't always play a factor in the race. Will it play a factor in this one? Because you know the Republicans and the National Democrats will be pumping tons of money into this race.
Well, as will, I mean, now, Tom Tillis may only have $1 million in his war chest, but let's not forget that Americans for Prosperity dumped $9 million to attack Kay Hagan for the past year. So I would not put it past some of these dark money groups to try to influence these elections. So the coffers of the individuals don't actually denote the coffers of any of the race itself. I mean, otherwise, you know, America Rising, Carolina Rising, the newest pack, dark money pack group trying to influence their elections, wouldn't be here. But I do think that, you know, Kay has the good fortune of being a formal, of being a U.S. senator. So that affords you to at least have.
Eric Cantor was majority leader.
No, I was talking about money. I was speaking of money in particular. Right. However, the best thing for Kay Hagan is that she has people. The people of North Carolina are her fellow Democrats who want to stand lockstep and support her.
Well, we've seen these Moral Monday protesters at the legislature every week last during the short session last summer. I think they're back again this summer.
They are.
So they are representative of a group of people who really don't like what the legislature has been doing up there. And how many of them are how many people out there do you think agree with them who simply don't have the time or the inclination to go out into the heat and protest in Raleigh on Mondays?
I think there's a large number of people that I've actually been to every Moral Monday down at the General Assembly. Mm-hmm. I have been down there in the crowds. And these are not your left-wing radicals. They are doctors, teachers, a lot of older white women, I think, because of, as you say, they have the opportunity to go out there. Mm-hmm. Folks who care about the water, these are not some fringe left-wing group. They're not asking for extreme policies. They're asking for teachers to be shown respect, for sick people to be given respect, as well as to curb these voter suppression laws that have been put on the books. This week coming up, they're focusing on raising the minimum wage, which, if I recall, has a 78% approval rating in the state. So they're not really a fringe group. So I would have to venture an assertion that there are a lot more people than there are at Moral Monday who believe with what they're doing.
So is it safe to say that the Democrats, if the Moral Monday people are not officially part of the Democratic Party, that the Democratic Party will take some of their complaints and use them as campaign hammers?
Well, at the state convention this past weekend, our entire governing body voted to endorse Moral Mondays. So indeed, once again, it has to do with common values. There are a lot of values we share. Equal rights for women, equal rights for the LGBT community, anti-fracking. These are actually our issues. And so Reverend Barber has done an amazing job to keep the pressure on the General Assembly. And it is our job to take that anger and turn it into votes.
Let me share some comments that have come in as we've been talking here. Jenny emails, don't you and your guest think that the Republicans who vote against their economic best interests also, aside from not maybe having time to research the issues, vote in favor of socially conservative issues such as guns, abortion, gay rights, etc., and that they let these things override their economic situation? You're nodding yes.
I am. I think a lot of times these wedge issues are used to splinter off folks who would otherwise vote in another way.
And so if these people are so invested in their belief about the Second Amendment, about they don't like abortion, they think gay rights is wrong, etc., how do you reach them? Can you get through to them, or are they a lost cause?
Well, see, that's the interesting thing about the Democratic Party. I don't tell any of my Democrats that they have to be pro-choice. They can choose one way or another. I don't tell my Democrats that they're not allowed to have guns. I am a gun owner myself. It's really a matter of engagement. I've actually been able to turn quite a few Republicans into Democrats just by engaging. You just have to decide and determine. It's a longer process. It means that every single one of us, democracy is an everyday activity. That means that each of us has to speak, not with those who don't want to listen, but to those who may be open to listen. And though they may vote against their economic interest, if they don't have earmuffs on to stop listening to you, they are willing to even sit and engage. You have an opportunity there. But it takes all of us engaging every day.
Jim on Facebook says, as a supporter of the Democratic Party candidates and values, I'm very dismayed in North Carolina Attorney General Roy Cooper siding with the state of North Carolina to discriminate against gay and lesbian citizens for marriage equality. Cooper is a statewide Democrat, and as Attorney General, I strongly feel he should represent and stand for the people of North Carolina. His actions make me wonder what a Governor Cooper would do.
Well, the attorney general, I chatted with a former attorney general who told me that attorney general is the best and worst elected office to go for a different office from, because there are rules. The attorney general must, his duty
is to enforce
the law. And it is a very difficult position.
So when the national attorney general, Eric Holder, chooses not to enforce, for instance, the marijuana laws, which are on the books nationwide, and yet some states sell it for recreational and medical purposes. Is that because his boss, the president, as head of the administration, has decided not to do it, and therefore the Attorney General of the United States will not go after it? And because we have a Republican governor, the Democratic Attorney General in North Carolina has to do what the governor says?
I could not tell you of the inner workings mm-hmm. of the United States Justice Department, but I do know that if you look at the 60% proposed cuts to the Department of Justice that the Republicans have proposed, mm-hmm. You can tell that there is definitely a point to try to discredit and weaken our attorney general. And so it's, you know, I always look at things that, what kind of traps can they lay out? That's why the attorney general position is so difficult. But he has come out. That was one of the reasons when the voter suppression law came out, Roy Cooper stood up very, very strongly against it, which is why they tried to bring in additional attorneys.
Peggy emails, in 2012, there were 1.4 million more votes for Democrats than Republicans. Democrats lost due to redistricting. I'm voting for Hagan, not because I really like her, though. I dislike like Tillis more than I like Hagan. She's not very inspiring. This from a registered Democrat. AB on Facebook says Kay Hagan voted 51-49, according to your interview with Olympia Snow of Maine, which we did a couple of months ago. She voted exactly as one would hope, to work in cooperation across the aisle and get things done. Yet with the influx of out-of-state money coming from sources such as the Koch brothers, I'm expecting our state to go even more red. When you look at who votes, it's not the people the Democrats are working towards. It's not younger people who need cheaper education. It's not people with low income wages who can take a day off to go and vote. You're also nodding at that.
I agree.
So what do you do?
Well, and that's indeed with the lower turnout. That's exactly what I was speaking of earlier. But that's why early voting is so imperative, which is why we have to have plans on the books now for what we're doing in the fall. And when you look at the fact that they got rid of straight ticket voting, which is often how a lot of our demographic voted, was using the state. There's a lot of voter education. It's a lot more time investment to get it done. But when you look at the suffering that the working folks are going through right now, there is actually more engagement than I have seen in other years. I've been doing this for a little over 10 years. And for a midterm election, I'm actually seeing folks are asking me much earlier, what can I do now? And that's a very, very promising circumstance.
I have 10 seconds. If you're successful, how long does it take to win back the House and Senate in North Carolina?
I look at this as a long-term plan. We have 2014 goals, 2016 goals, and 2018, so that we can work on redistricting in 2020.
And you think it's possible?
I do.
Yes or no? Okay. Casey Mann, Executive Director of the North Carolina Democratic Party. Thanks for the hour.